Picture this. It's February 22nd, 1980.
Oh, setting the scene right away. I like it.
You know, I have to. So the tension of the Cold War is just hanging heavy in the air, right?
Yeah.
And you're sitting down to watch what will eventually become known as the Miracle on Ice.
A truly legendary moment.
Exactly. The U.S. Olympic men's hockey team facing off against the, well, seemingly unbeatable Soviet Union. It is one of the most culturally defining moments in American sports history. But if you were actually watching it that Friday night,
your reality was vastly different from how we experience sports today.
Exactly. From the research we collected, I mean, the mechanics of that night are just wild to look back on. That game wasn't even televised live in the United States.
Which is unthinkable now. I mean, the puck dropped at, what, 5 p.m. Eastern time?
Right, 5 p.m. But ABC tape delayed the entire broadcast until 8 p.m. They just wanted better Friday night primetime ratings.
And they could do that because they completely controlled the flow of information. There was no alternative screen to check.
Yet today, if a network tried to tape delay a game of that magnitude, I mean, the internet would ruin the result for you in about 30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds is generous. It would be instantaneous.
True. And the details from the sources we pored over show it gets even stranger. That game,
yeah.
It wasn't even for the gold medal.
Right. It was just a semifinal.
Yeah. If the United States hadn't gone on to beat Finland 2 days later in a game that actually was broadcast live early Sunday morning, by the way, the Soviets would have taken the gold anyway.
That's a detail people always forget. And here's another one. ABC aired those winter games from Lake Placid, but they didn't even have the whole Olympic package. NBC had the rights to the summer games in Moscow.
Which perfectly illustrates the baseline of sports broadcasting for decades. You just had a handful of networks, and you turned the dial to see what was on.
It was contained, you know, highly controlled and above all, simple.
Which brings us to what we are exploring for you today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We are looking into how we went from that incredibly simple, tape-delayed 1980 reality to what the industry is now calling the ultimate bundle from hell.
The bundle from hell. It really is an apt name.
It is, because watching sports today requires juggling like 10 different apps, subscriptions, and honestly, a finely tuned spreadsheet.
Oh, yeah. You literally need a spreadsheet to track it all.
And we aren't just looking at who bought what channel here. We're going to break down how live sports became the single most expensive structural foundation of the entire streaming economy.
Yeah. To understand the utter chaos of 2026, we first have to understand the economic engine that built the modern sports world and how that engine completely stalled out.
Right, because for a long time, the formula was almost entirely static. If you look back through the 50s, the 70s, and most of the 80s, there were exactly three major broadcast networks.
ABC, NBC, and CBS. That was basically it.
Yeah, and cable television existed, sure, but it was in its absolute infancy. I mean, ESPN didn't launch until 1979. And initially, it was mostly just expanding into rural markets, places that couldn't get a good over-the-air broadcast signal.
And the rights back then were highly concentrated. The NFL, for instance, it rotated smoothly between CBS for the NFC and NBC for the AFC. You always knew where the game was.
Still, Fox shook things up, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That held steady until Fox shocked the industry in 1993 by outbidding CBS for the NFC package. But even with Fox entering the fray, we were still talking about free over-the-air television.
But the real shift, the economic foundation that eventually led to today's fragmentation, happened at the local level.
Yeah.
With regional sports networks or RSNs.
This is where it gets incredibly counterintuitive.
It really does. So the modern era of RSNs really took hold in the late 90s, starting with networks like Comcast, Sportsnet Philly in 1997. They became the dominant way local baseball, basketball, and hockey were distributed on cable.
And the business model behind them was an absolute gold mine. It was all based on something called carriage fees.
Okay, I want to pause here and really dig into this for a second, because understanding carriage fees explains almost everything that went wrong later.
Let's do it.
So a carriage fee is the amount of money a cable provider like Comcast or Time Warner pays a network per subscriber per month just to carry that channel.
Precisely. And RSNs managed to get themselves bundled into the basic cable package.
Right.
This meant that every single household in a market with basic cable was paying $3, $4, maybe $5 a month to the local sports network.
So if I'm understanding the mechanism here, and stop me if I'm wrong, millions of people who didn't care about sports at all were paying for this.
Yep. People who just wanted to watch the Food Network or the local news.
They were unknowingly paying $5 a month to fund the local baseball team's payroll.
That is exactly what happened. The non-sports fans inadvertently subsidized the golden age of sports broadcasting.
Wow.
It was like a giant Jenga tower. The solid foundation at the bottom consisted of millions of casual cable subscribers who never even watched a game.
Okay, I like that analogy.
And as long as they kept paying their monthly cable bill, the RSNs made hundreds of millions of dollars, which they then paid to the local teams, making the leagues richer and richer.
But then the cord-cutting revolution happened. People started dropping basic cable for Netflix and Hulu. And when they did, they essentially pulled out those bottom blocks of the Jenga tower.
Exactly. The non-sports fans just stopped subsidizing the sports fans.
And the tower collapsed.
Completely. The revenue simply wasn't there anymore. The legacy television networks and the local RSNs suddenly couldn't afford the skyrocketing price of sports rights.
Because player salaries and league revenue expectations had grown to a point where traditional television couldn't support them alone anymore.
Right. The math just broke.
And the numbers from the sources we pored over show just how steep that incline became. Let's contrast our 1980 intro with today. In 1980, ABC paid roughly $15.5 million to broadcast the Winter Olympics.
$15.5 million, that sounds quaint now.
Right. Because NBC's latest rights extension for the Olympics, the one signed to carry them through 2036, cost about $3 billion.
$3 billion? But, you know, the Olympics only happen every 2 years. To see the real breakpoint, you have to look at the week-in, week-out leagues.
Oh, absolutely. So for the listener, you might want to sit down for this one. The estimated cost for the 2026 NFL television package is $10.2 billion.
And that is just for a single year.
A single year. And because the traditional networks, CBS, Fox, NBC, and Disney's ABC, couldn't absorb a $10 billion annual bill by themselves, the NFL had to bring in new partners.
They had to turn to the only companies on Earth with that kind of available liquidity, big tech.
Yeah, so the league just carved up the schedule. The traditional networks kept their Sunday afternoon and primetime slots, but the NFL sold Thursday Night Football to Amazon for $1 billion a year.
$1 billion for Thursday alone.
And then they sold exclusive Christmas Day games to Netflix for roughly $150 million. Now, I look at Netflix spending $150 million on Christmas Day, and I'm honestly a bit confused by the economics of it. Well, Netflix doesn't run commercials the way a traditional broadcast network does.
Right.
I mean, they have a basic ad tier now, sure, but it's not the same density. How do they possibly make a $150 million investment back on a single day of football?
It's an excellent question, and it really comes down to a concept the streaming industry calls sticky subscribers.
The sticky subscribers.
Yeah. For years, the streaming wars were fought with prestige dramas and movies. But the problem with a $100 million drama series is that a user signs up on Friday, binges the entire season by Sunday night, and then cancels their subscription on Monday morning.
Oh, the dreaded subscriber churn.
Exactly. Churn is the single biggest threat to a streaming platform's survival. Live sports are the ultimate antidote to churn.
Because it's an event.
Right. If Netflix can acquire a couple of million new subscribers in December who sign up just to watch the NFL on Christmas, a significant percentage of those people will forget to cancel. Or they'll stick around to sample other shows in January and February.
Okay, so the $150 million isn't about selling ads during the game at all. It's really just a giant customer acquisition cost.
Precisely. And for a company like Amazon, it's even more integrated. They want you on Prime Video on Thursday night so that when the game is over, you buy a new blender or a pair of shoes with your Prime shipping account.
That is so true.
Live sports guarantee that users repeatedly open the app over a span of months.
Which makes perfect sense for the platforms, but the ripple effect for the fan is just brutal. The leagues recognize that these tech giants are desperate for this sticky content. So instead of selling an entire season to one network, they realized they could make vastly more money by fracturing the season and selling the pieces to the highest bidder.
It creates a forced migration for the viewer. And we see this incredibly clearly with NASCAR.
Yes. The NASCAR media rights deal starting in 2025 is the perfect case study for this from the research. To maximize their revenue to about $1.1 billion a year, NASCAR essentially chopped their season into four distinct chunks.
Four chunks? It's wild.
So if you are a fan trying to follow the storyline of a single season, you start your year watching Fox. But a third of the way through the season, the races vanish from Fox, and you are forced to migrate your digital footprint over to Amazon Prime.
Just completely change platforms mid-season.
Yep. Then, 5 weeks later, you have to move again to Warner Brothers Discovery, which means finding the race on TNT or Max. And finally, for the end of the season, you migrate a fourth time over to NBC and Peacock.
You are constantly chasing the sport, And that's just a linear sport where the events happen sequentially. When you look at sports with regional complexities like Major League Baseball, the mechanics of this transition get even messier.
Oh, I really want to get into the MLB situation because this is where that Jenga tower metaphor you used really hits the ground. When those basic cable subscribers cut the cord, the regional sports networks started going bankrupt. Bally Sports being the most famous example of this collapse.
Right, Bally's bankruptcy was a huge turning point.
So what actually happens when the local network that pays the team suddenly goes under?
The leagues are being forced to internalize the production. Historically, MLB teams just licensed the right to broadcast to a network like Bally. The network provided the cameras, the producers, the satellite trucks, and handled the distribution.
They just outsourced everything.
Exactly. But with the RSNs failing, Major League Baseball has actually had to step in and take over the technical production for several of its own franchises.
So they are essentially having to build their own television networks on the fly just to make sure the games are visible in the local markets.
Yeah, and some teams are even reverting to over-the-air local broadcast channels. It's almost like stepping back into the 1980s simply because they desperately need the reach.
Right.
And simultaneously, they are trying to figure out how to stream these games in market without violating the few remaining cable contracts they do have. It is a highly complex transitional period.
Which is the polite industry way of saying it is an absolute headache for the consumer.
Total headache.
Let's talk about the consumer for a second, because the original promise of streaming was liberation. We were told that cutting the cord would save us from that bloated $100 a month cable bill.
Mm.
But when you look at how these rights are distributed in 2026, haven't the streamers and the leagues just colluded to rebuild the exact same expensive bundle?
I mean,
except now it's piecemeal. It requires a dozen different passwords, and the interface changes every single week.
Mathematically, you are completely right. The cost of sports has always been high, but it used to be hidden inside your cable bill and subsidized by your neighbor who only watched the History Channel.
Right.
Now, the true cost of sports is being exposed, and it is being pushed directly onto the fan.
Let's synthesize the grim math for a true sports fanatic right now based on the research. If you want to follow the 2025-2026 NFL season comprehensively, you are hit from every angle. You need your base cable or digital bundle like YouTube TV for the Sunday afternoon games.
Okay, that's one.
But then you need Amazon Prime for Thursdays. You need Peacock for certain Sunday night games. You need Netflix for Christmas. You need ESPN Plus for exclusive international or Monday games.
And if you don't live in the same city as your favorite team, you need the NFL Sunday Ticket package, which runs hundreds of dollars a season on top of all that.
Yeah. The research we collected estimates that a diehard NFL fan is looking at spending between $600 and $800 just to get full coverage of a single football season.
It's staggering.
And if you are an omnivorous sports fan, someone who wants to watch the NFL, plus the NBA, plus your local baseball and hockey teams, you are looking at needing 8 to 10 different subscriptions. You are blowing far past that old $100 a month cable bill.
Which brings us to a critical juncture. The economics aren't going to reverse themselves. The leagues aren't going to just give back the billions of dollars. And big tech isn't going to suddenly stop using live sports as customer acquisition tools.
No, the genie is out of the bottle.
So how does the average person actually navigate this without going completely broke?
The sources we pored over offer a sort of psychological survival guide for the modern fan. And it requires fundamentally changing how we interact with the content.
The first and arguably most difficult step is limitation.
Yeah, you have to pick two or three specific teams to follow closely and just let the rest go. The era of casually flipping on the TV on a random Tuesday night to see whatever basketball game happens to be on, that's a luxury that now costs hundreds of dollars a year. You have to become a specialist rather than a generalist.
It hurts to hear, but it's true. The second step is a major shift in expectations regarding live viewing. You have to accept that you are going to miss live games.
Which goes against every instinct a sports fan has.
It does. But if your team is playing exclusively on Peacock one week and you don't have Peacock, you just have to be okay with waiting an hour after the game ends to watch the highlights.
And regarding those highlights, there's a highly effective technical workaround the sources suggest. Utilizing the ad-free tier of YouTube, which costs around $15 a month.
That is a very interesting mechanism because all the major leagues upload extensive 10 to 15 minute condensed highlight packages to YouTube almost immediately after the games conclude.
Right. And if you have the ad-free version, the algorithm quickly learns which teams you follow. So instead of navigating 6 different streaming apps, you open one clean interface and you get a high-quality, commercial-free distillation of the entire night of sports in about 30 minutes.
You miss the live tension, sure, but you save yourself thousands of dollars a year.
Exactly. And the final piece of advice is perhaps the most enduring. Lean back into communal viewing.
I love this one.
When there is a major event, a playoff run, a high-stakes race, a rivalry football game, hit a local sports bar, or organize a watch party with neighbors.
I think that's the most important takeaway here. You share the cost of the subscriptions with the establishment, but more importantly, you share the experience. Because despite all the corporate maneuvering, the carriage fee battles, and the billion-dollar tech deals, sports fundamentally remain cultural glue. They are the ultimate water cooler conversation. The human desire to gather and witness incredible feats of athleticism together hasn't changed since that 1980 miracle on ice. The delivery mechanism is infinitely more complicated, but the core psychological draw is identical.
Accessing that communal experience just shouldn't require a spreadsheet and a second mortgage. And that reality leads me to a final thought I want to leave you with today.
What do you think, Em?
Well, we are currently watching the middlemen, the regional networks, and the old cable bundles collapse, right? We see leagues like Major League Baseball stepping in to handle their own broadcast production. If we project this trajectory 10 years into the future, how long until the middleman vanishes entirely?
Oh, that's fascinating.
Imagine a future where you don't pay Amazon or NBC or Disney to watch a game. What if you pay the athlete or the team directly? Imagine bypassing a broadcast entirely and buying a direct subscription to a live stream coming from a tiny 8K camera mounted right inside your favorite quarterback's helmet.
That would be wild.
Or purchasing a virtual reality ticket directly from the team's app, allowing you to put on a headset and sit in a digital courtside seat next to avatars of your friends who live across the country.
The tech is basically there already.
Exactly. But if we move toward this hyper-personalized direct-to-consumer reality, would it finally fix the incredible fragmentation and high cost we are living through right now? Or would isolating us in our own custom, perfect VR viewpoints, completely destroy the last shared communal moments we have left?
That is quite the paradox.
Something to chew on the next time you find yourself scrolling through 5 different apps just to figure out what channel the game is on. Keep questioning the media landscape around you, stay curious, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.